This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge here on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 until 9 p.m. And I'm Tal Meritz, I'm your host. And I wanted to start, of course, I want to wish everyone, we have a lot of upcoming holidays right now. I mean, tonight it's Maundy Thursday, we have Good Friday, and then it's both Easter and Passover this weekend. And we will talk about a bit of that in a moment. But first, I want to say I'd love to hear from the community, those of you out there. Many of you, of course, are celebrating some of these holidays. It seems appropriate. We'll talk about our holy days of the week. And we'll actually cover both. Just quickly, Pesach and Easter. Pesach is the Hebrew name for Passover. And I thought that seeing we're talking about Easter a bit later on, actually, today on the show, we'll cover that in a moment. But also, last year's Passover show was fairly expansive. It's a great show. And I'd actually recommend that people go back, if you don't do that currently, go on the website, or you can always find via various podcasting apps. Go find the Spirit Lounge podcast. We have all our shows up there, and you should scroll back and go listen to our Passover episode, because it is a great one. But instead, I wanted to talk this week just a little about the relationship between Passover and Easter for our holy day of the week. It's actually, these holidays are closely matched, Easter being a holiday that actually follows the Hebrew calendar. That's why it moves around. All the Jewish holidays move according to the Hebrew lunar calendar, so it doesn't quite perfectly fit with the Greco-Roman, and that's why it moves around, and Easter is the same, it moves around as a result. So it's actually theorized, by the way, that Jesus's Last Supper was actually a Passover meal. The whole drinking of the wine and breaking of bread, it really seems to have a bit of a Passover relationship, and considering it happened right up around this time of year, that's starting to be understood that might have been the case. But unfortunately, though, these two holidays are closely related to the, and the two religions are, you know, cousins and such. Unfortunately, these holidays have a fairly dark history in terms of their relationship. Particularly around medieval times, these were the high point for passion plays. So passion plays are, you know, the recreations of Jesus's life leading up to his crucifixion. Basically, the Passion of the Christ is a passion play, for example. And particularly during these times, these plays would emphasize the narrative element of Jews rejecting and killing Christ. Now, this, of course, would, as even though that whole element is unfortunate in and of itself, unfortunately, this would happen right around when Jews were celebrating Pesach, or Passover, a holiday where people drank four cups of wine as part of their festivities. Of course, with the existence of communion at this time when everyone was Catholic, it was then thought the Jews were celebrating the death of Christ by joyfully drinking his blood, right? When people were having communion, Jews were drinking four cups of wine, and people have just seen these passion plays about where the Jews have been held responsible for the death of Christ. So this is actually where the concept of a blood libel comes from. So if you've ever heard any of those now hilarious concepts of Jews like stealing Christian children and drinking blood and saccharin, baking them into bread, all these ridiculous, disgusting, or now we're hilarious rumors, this all comes from this era and this concept, and it was always a rumor that it was happening around Easter. So this actually led to some... The interesting thing is that this had an interesting impact on Passover. There are two traditions that really came about largely in response to these issues. The first was that while in theory you're supposed to drink red wine during Passover, some of the Jews in these areas started drinking white wine, and this was... And some still do today, not so many, but it's actually a carryover from medieval times. And the aim was to try and show that the four Jews that they were like, look, we're just drinking wine. It's not blood of Christian children or anything like that. And the other one was that there's this other Passover tradition that almost everyone does, where one leaves the door open for the prophet Eliyahu Hanavi or the prophet Elijah so that he can come join your Passover table. And it's not an explicit requirement to Passover, but its popularity increased during medieval times in part because it was sort of an open door, and so it would show everyone that you could see these people that are having just a nice dinner. It was a normal dinner, and there was no evil rituals going on celebrating the death of Christ. Of course, Passover has nothing to do with that at all. Passover is really a celebration of the Israelites' liberation as slaves in Egypt. And during Passover, people come, they gather, and they really, the whole festival is actually just about retelling the story. And there's huge emphasis on saying we always have to tell it, we have to teach it to our children, the adults have to relearn it, because that's really the origin of the people. So it has quite a fascinating history, but it is unfortunate that while now I think it's really exciting that we get to have a show that's a Passover and Easter double, it is a bit sad that it has such a dark relationship. And I'm glad that that's been mended over time. And in particular, I think it was quite inspirational when back in the 70s, there was Vatican II, and the Pope at the time really scaled back a lot of things. And in particular said that we won't be holding Jews responsible for the death of Christ, and that that's unfair. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing, and I'm so glad to hear it. And it's great to see that in recent times the relationship between Jews and Christians is really at a high point. It's never been at a better time than now. I also wanted to just know we have had a write in just from Cam and Pete, our boys from Drive. They want to say that for Easter for them is 4 days off. I'm sure. So thank you very much for that. We do have, I'm sure we'll have quite a few that feel that way. And for those that feel that way, congratulations, have a great Easter, and have a good few days off. But I wanted to just, our first song today, I just want to have a little Passover song. It's not really related to Passover itself at all. It's actually from the soundtrack of the cartoon musical Prince of Egypt. I love Prince of Egypt. It's a great, great, awesome, awesome little movie. It's actually a Steven Spielberg. And I think it's much better than Exodus, Gods and Kings, that new one that came about. So this is a song from that one. And it's called Through Heaven's Eyes. Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And today we actually have a guest in today. It's very exciting. We have Reverend Charles. He's the minister at Queenscliff Point Lonsdale Uniting Church. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Tal. How are you going?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you very much. So, Charles, why don't we start? Why don't you just tell us a little about your role?
I'm the minister, as you just said, at Queenscliff Point Lonsdale Uniting Church. So, you know, tonight I'm in the middle of writing a reflection for tomorrow's Good Friday service, of course, which is the most important day of the Christian year. So we've just got a bit of a busy time coming up, of course, with all the Easter services and so on.
It's interesting you say that. Are you actually saying that in many ways that Good Friday is a more important event than Easter?
than Sunday, the Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, they're one event, really, in terms of our understanding of it. It's really, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, well, yes.
And life's like that, really. You can't have the good stuff without the suffering as well. So, in a sense, it reflects what our human experience is like, in that you go through suffering, but with grace, you come out the other side, and you may well be better for it. So that, you know, that's in a nutshell, if you like, the story of Easter. Yeah.
Well, why don't you? How long have you been a minister for?
Oh, I've been in Queenscliff for about 16 years, and before that, I was in Terang down in the Western District for about 8 years. So that makes 24 years, doesn't it?
Oh, wow. That is
that's
a pretty good stint.
Yeah.
And what happens when a minister sort of goes to a new area? I mean, it's a obviously you've been there for a while now,
yes,
but
yes.
How's that initial entrance? Because I mean, you're really in many ways the leader of a community.
I share this position with my wife. Kerry is also ordained, so we're a team, if you like. And as I haven't moved for quite some time, so it's not part of my regular experience, but I do talk to ministers who move, and for some it's a fresh start and a chance to, you know, forget about the past and start something very new. For others, it can be a bit of a daunting experience, and a whole new array of people and a whole new array of issues to encounter. We have seen ourselves as long-term and wanted to work with the congregation and develop it over a period of time. And I think that's becoming more common in churches, that if you want to change things, you have to hang around for a bit and work with the congregation and build it in new directions. So that's why we're still here.
Right. And I'm assuming the previous church was also a uniting church?
Yes, that's right.
Does that ever... I was just suddenly wondering, just listening to you, do people ever change? Do people ever... Like, does that happen? Like, I mean, I'm assuming...
Yeah.
You learnt within the context of the uniting church. Can people move around, some of them, a bit?
They do. There's sort of... Back 20, 30 years ago, there was a big ecumenical movement when churches were trying to get together and work together with things. But there's almost a new sense of, well, the denomination doesn't matter anymore, so we individuals choose which one they go to, and we'll move from being Catholic for a while, and then they'll go to a Baptist church. And it's almost like that's the new ecumenical sort of move, is our congregation is made up of people from all sorts of different backgrounds and faiths, and we all work together to be the church.
Right.
So rather than us all being sort of the one thing in this congregation and we go over and talk to the Catholics, we actually have a number of Catholics amongst us who worship with us, who... we have a number of Baptists with us and various people from backgrounds. We've even got a Buddhist helping in our op shop here. So we really are, and most congregations are very diverse these days.
How do churches deal with that? I mean, do they change the way they carry out their services as a result, in order to be sort of pulling out to those people, or is it just sort of understood, like, you know, if you like what we do, of course you're welcome to come along?
There's a bit of both of that. Most, like, in the 16 years that we've been here, we've changed with the congregation. So we would probably understand ourselves quite differently now from what we did 15, 20 years ago, as does the congregation. It has moved on a progressive path, I guess you'd say. And so things that we accept as quite normal for us now, 15 years ago, would have been quite contentious issues that would have been up for debate and might have been quite divisive at the time. So it changes over time.
What sort of things have changed over time?
Well, I guess one of the things that has changed is our involvement with refugees. We've progressively become more involved with some of the local refugees. Another thing that's changed is our connection with the LGBTI community and our support of that. That sort of was very much on the back burner 15 years ago, and it wasn't something that we were, you know, engaged in particularly. It was an issue that was out there, but more recently we've become more connected with people and tried to do some work that supports both the families of and LGBTI people themselves.
Why do you think that's changed?
It's changed with society, so there's a greater acceptance of gay people generally, and it's not complete yet, and we're still working on that, and we're working towards marriage equality and all of those things as well. But I think in some ways the church has been dragged kicking and screaming along, and some of them are still kicking and screaming. But for some of us that are on the more progressive end, we're very much with the experience of people who have gay, lesbian family members, or because we have a number of them in our congregation, and are wanting to engage with the people and hear their stories rather than just debate the issue, which can be quite alienating.
Of course. I thought, let's just backtrack quickly just for one second.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to become a minister?
Oh, funny issue. I can't, yeah. I have a very strong church background, so my family was very strong churchgoers in the Methodist tradition, which is one of the traditions that came into the Uniting Church. And as in my late teens, I was at university studying for accounting, would you believe? But I was also getting involved in what was a very active youth movement in the suburbs in those days, and there are some significant people in those times in my life that helped shape and form me and helped me to build my faith of that time, and inspired me, I guess, to take up ministry as a career after having a fairly disastrous sort of run in the accountancy career, I might say.
And what about your wife?
Well, she trained as a nurse initially, but she also. And I guess in the 80s it was very much women in ministry was one of those issues that the church was debating, a bit similar to the gay and lesbian issue now. But the Uniting Church was quite progressive at that stage and had begun to ordain ministers, and Kerry really felt that she was called to that sort of a path, and so we both started going to college and doing study in theology and pastoral care and church history and that sort of stuff, and also began an application process to become a minister.
I can imagine that process can be a bit difficult.
Well, it's quite a lengthy process because there are, well, I think the church is in some ways is quite thorough with, you know, wanting to ensure that you're serious about this thing. So there's a whole process and there's different levels of the church that have to make the decision. So you sort of go before the local congregation, you go before the regional presbytery, and then there's a selection weekend as well where, you have to pass with flying colours. So,
of course.
So that process takes at least 18 months, and there's a strong emphasis on discerning what your call is, or what path that you're feeling you want to take.
I wanted to ask, why don't we talk a little bit about our upcoming holiday, Easter?
Yes.
I wanted to ask, really, because I think this one probably comes up a bit, and even when I was on drive this afternoon, just doing a little plug for tonight's show,
mm-hmm.
someone does ask, why is it called Good Friday? So it's probably worth asking exactly that.
Oh, gosh, I don't really know.
No.
It's a long tradition. I think it's to do with the word good and the association with the word God.
Okay.
But I don't know that I can quite explain it exactly, but I believe that that's where the connection lies. So
that's all right. I can understand. It is worth noting, it is a bit of a funny one, and I'm sure some people are, you know, a bit like, but isn't this not a good day? Isn't that the whole deal?
Well, that is, of course, a very pertinent point, of course. Good Friday is a day of great suffering and pain inflicted by an inconsiderate regime on an innocent person, and yet it's also the centre of a movement that is dedicated to love, at least in its best form, is dedicated to love, and so it is the day out of which much good comes.
So what happens on a Good Friday service?
Well, it focuses very much on the crucifixion. So in a sense, the Easter season is one festival. So and it goes with the days of the story. So tonight, of course, is Maundy Thursday, sometimes called Holy Thursday, and it's the night that there's a story of Jesus washing the feet of the disciples, and then after that they share bread and wine as part of the Last Supper. And that, of course, is the basis for the whole communion service of that is universally celebrated throughout the church, well, almost universally.
I think I was talking about it earlier. I think I accidentally said it was more specifically Catholic, but now okay. I need to backtrack on that one.
Yes. Well, yes, it's quite universal. Well, the word Catholic actually means universal, but we won't go there.
I'm sure we'll get a few write-ins suddenly.
Yeah. So Good Friday, then, is the day that the crucifixion took place, and so the readings and the reflections very much reflect on suffering and death and not leaving people without hope, but there's that sense of waiting from the Friday through to the Sunday, and so the Sunday is the celebration, if you like, of the resurrection or the Easter day, and so the stories that are read there are about the empty tomb and some of the stories that come from after the. After the resurrection. So it's all part of that story that binds us all together, I guess you could say.
Mm. And at what point did the Easter Bunny hide all the eggs for Jesus to find? Which I bring up, actually, because I do want to ask, where does the bunny come from, and where do the eggs come from? Because I think they have two different sources, because it doesn't seem to me like Easter bunnies should be laying eggs.
No. Well, they're not in the Bible, I can assure you of that. Well, actually, they are in the Bible, but not in that form. But, they, of course, the somewhere in the history of the church, a different festival which was widely celebrated, was assumed by the church. So the festival that celebrated fertility and new life and had symbols such as rabbits and eggs was...
I guess it was also spring.
Yes, a spring festival, of course, in the Northern Hemisphere. So that was felt to be a good time to celebrate Easter, and because the word Easter is also from that other tradition. The word Easter doesn't appear in the Bible. It's from the word oyster, which is again.
It sounds like a very sexy holiday, I have to say. It's the oyster, and there's the bunnies, and it's all about
chocolate.
Fertility. It's wow.
It sounds
very unlike my understanding of Easter. But fascinating. So I was also wondering, my understanding is that the chocolate eggs are pretty recent a concept.
I would think that, and I don't know.
I think they used to be painted, like people would paint eggs or something of that kind.
Well, there are traditions in Germany in particular where they paint the eggs, but then they tap them together and they say the words Christ is risen, and so that's the Easter Sunday sort of part of the celebration there, which again is a sort of a melding of traditions. We're very we're always ready to take on extra traditions in the church, even though we don't admit it sometimes.
Oh no, of course not, of course not.
Well, it's about being relevant to people as well and connecting with people where they are, so some people say we just take over other things, but yeah.
What about refraining from eating meat? I think specifically on Good Friday?
Yes, that is more so a Catholic thing. So I'm from a Protestant tradition. It hasn't been a big thing in my family, although we tend to eat fish on Good Friday just because it's the thing that people do. And I can tell you the fish and chip shops in Queenscliff tomorrow night will have queues coming out the door because everyone's coming from everywhere and they all want to eat fish tomorrow night.
So. Oh, yeah, the chocolate shops get Sunday and the fish and chip shops get...
The chocolate shops, things go on sale on Sunday, don't they? Anyway.
Don't you? Oh, there's another holiday people don't know about. It's called Pagan Monday where we all come and grab all those leftover chocolates.
Leftover, if there's any left.
Yeah, celebrate Easter late in chocolate form. So what is, though, how come people don't eat meat?
I'm not certain fully of the tradition.
It's okay? It's not from your background, I can understand?
Yeah, it's not. There's some theories about one pope wanting to revive the economy of a certain fishing sort of element, and so he said, no, you can't eat meat, you've got to eat fish on Fridays once a week. I think that's a conspiracy theory.
That one sounds to me like one of those, as someone who's actually a studies history, that one sounds to me like one of those stories that in your first lesson they go, it didn't happen like that.
Yeah, no, that's not quite right, but symbolically I think it's to do with the blood, the red meat. So it's a red meat.
Like refraining from sort of killing and eating flesh on the day that maybe something like that. Okay, very interesting. It makes sense to me. Just it's worth noting that
I don't know
what
it means for the poor old fish.
It is worth noting. It is worth noting in Judaism, one of the restrictions on Shabbat or the Sabbath is one of the things you can't do constituting as work is killing. So, you know, anything you would have to do, you'd have to do it beforehand, like many things. I wonder if there's some sort of more historic, because sometimes these things pop up a bit double like that. And it is interesting that of all the things where it's like a Friday night, you don't kill these things. And I do not know.
No.
Well, what do people normally do on an Easter?
Normally. What's normal? Normally they go camping, don't they?
Yes, I think so. But what about, let's say I was an observant, assuming I'm an observant Christian.
Yes.
We've mentioned I might go to Mundi Thursday.
Yes, you might have even been to Palm Sunday last Sunday.
You're right, I should have been to Palm Sunday.
And waved the palms around and then gone on the refugee march, which I had intended to go on Sunday afternoon, but I, in the end, couldn't get up there, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I've got Good Friday, and as you cover, we would be commemorating, I guess, the crucifixion and punishment of Christ.
And one of the, particularly in the Catholic Church, but quite a few other denominations celebrate the Stations of the Cross. So if you go into a Catholic church, you'll see that there's 14 paintings or statues or depictions of Christ in his last days that are around the walls.
There's actually specific. It said that, in this spot that he fell down and at this. I know they're actually the actual stations, whether or not they are the actual stations or not, I don't know, but there are actually stations set out in Jerusalem in the Old City.
There are, yes, and in fact there's stations in Melbourne as well. Large statues outside, I think 12 or 14 of the city churches. And so tomorrow on, I think it starts at 11 or 12 or something, there is a walk from each station. And a station, of course, is a place that you stop, just like on the trains. So at each station, people will stop and there'll be some sort of meditation or reflection on the story of the cross.
Thank you very much for speaking with us about a fairly wide range of issues.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Mm.
And thank you. And well then, faithful listeners, we've reached the end of another show of The Spirit Lounge. Thank you so much for joining me. I'd like to wish everyone there have a great Easter, have a great Passover, just have a great weekend. And I hope to see you next week on The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.